Hi everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Awareness Podcast. My name is Susan Telford, and I'm here today with my guest Hina Vasani. Welcome, Hina. It's lovely to see you. It's Hina's second appearance on the Awareness Podcast. She was interviewed last year by Jenny Beale, and so I'll place the link to that interview in the show notes for this podcast so that you can review that as well. So for those of you that did not listen to that podcast and who do not know Hina, I'm going to read you her bio before we start our conversation. So in her early 20s, Hina faced a serious health problem and was placed on a waiting list for a kidney transplant. This life-altering experience led her to question the meaning of life, birth and death. On the day of her transplant, she had a profound glimpse of her true nature, which caused her to reflect on the responsibility attached to receiving a donated organ. She embarked on a spiritual journey spanning over 25 years, exploring consciousness through non-dual paths like A Course in Miracles and Advaita Vedanta. Meditation, body-mind disciplines, and in-depth psychology have helped her integrate these teachings into her life. Her core teachers include Chloe Goodchild, Rupert Spira, and A.H. Almas. Her late grandmother, who was a devout Hindu, also played a significant role in shaping her path by inviting her to explore motherhood as a spiritual practice. This brought her face to face with her own conditioning and childhood trauma, leading to transformation and a deeper connection with her true self and the oneness of life. Remarkably, after 27 years, her transplanted kidney remains healthy, which caught the attention of her consultant, leading to the suggestion that she share her story and meditation techniques with others. Hina completes her training in compassionate inquiry this May with Dr. Gabor Maté, and will then go on to the six-month facilitator training course. She's also trained in inquiry and non-dual meditation with Richard Miller, PhD, who is a former student of Jean Klein and founder of the I Rest Institute, where she has been educated in yoga nidra and body sensing through the seven koshas or sheaths of identity. She remains a student of the Ridvan School Diamond Approach, where she studies diamond inquiry with A.H. Almas. Her book, Fragrance of Freedom, Discovering Peace Through Mothering, was published in October 2023 and is available via Amazon. It's a remarkable bio, Hina, remarkable. And there's so much in it that we could discuss. But as you've already done a podcast with Jenny and I've shared the link with our listeners, I feel it maybe suffices just to give us a bit of a summary of how that situation with your kidney, having a kidney transplant, opened up a whole spiritual path to you. Can you speak a bit about that for us, please?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me back. It's so beautiful to be able to share something that's so close to my heart. If I had to really sum it up as I look back over the 27 years, from this place that I am now in, I'm no longer identified with that separated, isolated self. And what's really emerged over the years is that I'm in complete contact with my inner and outer experience. So there's a fullness and a flow to life. And in that moment when you're at one with your experience, it means that you can touch into the shadow, you can touch into the darkness, you can touch into the joy. And at that level. So, you know, these are surface experiences. But at that level, there's also a depth of true self that I can feel too. And then there's a dissolving, almost like the experiencer and the experience dissolves. And space emerges. And, you know, life is happening. There's a fullness, an isness, and I'm present. I'm able to sense and feel. And then you question, who is sensing? Who is feeling? You know, who is listening? So it's a far cry from when I sat in that waiting room, deciding as to whether to take that transplant, you know, from a recently deceased donor. And I was in so much pain, so much heartbreak. There was so much abandonment inside me, trauma, and it was all unprocessed. And I had lived a life of quietude, my Indian conditioning. In some way, it took the voice out of me. And I couldn't really express myself as a young child. So there I was at the age of 21, you know, questioning whether I wanted to live.
Yeah, so that was really present for you at that time, that perhaps you may say no to that donated kidney because of that feeling of not wanting.
Yeah, absolutely. That feeling of utter loneliness and aloneness. And even though my family were in the next room and my partner right beside me, I just couldn't feel. I couldn't sense. I was so lost and disconnected from life.
And it's often those moments of absolute despair, really, that there seems to be something can break through. And, you know, you described it as having a glimpse of your true nature. So tell us what happened. You know, I'm seeing a picture, you know, of a young woman sitting in the hospital waiting room in absolute despair, thinking, I actually have the choice here, whether to live or die. You really did have that choice.
I really had that choice.
Something happened.
Yeah. And it was the first time ever I understood that no one owned me in this moment. I was absolutely aware of this is my choice, regardless of whatever you know my family want for me. And it was my transplant surgeon. I just sat opposite him. A transplant had come through, and I was ushered into his room, and I just looked into his eyes. It was like a new world presented itself through him. This was the man that was going to operate on me to give me a new life. And in that moment, as I looked into his eyes, there was this huge expansion. I wasn't this separated self. It was almost as if I was able to turn in and go deep, deep within myself. And I felt this unbelievable stillness. You know, it was so profound and nothing mattered anymore. You know, the worry and the tension and the anxiety that I was feeling inside, it just dissipated. And I sat for 10 hours in that waiting room. 10 hours. And it was a timeless space, absolutely timeless. And it was almost as if I was having a life review, because I understood with all my heart how much hate I had inside me, how much anger I had. I felt so disconnected from my own mother, who had left when I was a young child. I felt angry with my father. Bless him, but you know, he was always at work. There wasn't much connection there. And my dear stepmother, she had a terrible time when I was young with a profound deep depression. So she was in her own trauma. And it was, there was an awareness. It was almost as if because I was in a meditative place, I could see clearly with compassion for what I had endured and what I was going through inside my body too. So I needed that time, Susan. I needed that time to reflect, to understand, to contemplate. And my dear grandma, bless her, she had said to me that, we are Hindus and we suffer karmic consequences. So if you do take this kidney on, be aware that it has to be looked after with complete love and devotion and dedication. And we have to honor the life that has just left. So there was a huge responsibility also running through me. But I felt the grace. Now I felt the grace in this. And at the end, that's what got me through.
How did that change then? Because, you know, you were at a point of not knowing whether to say yes or not. And then this expansive experience that you're describing, how did the decision change itself or make itself within that? What did that feel like to you?
Yeah, it was love. I felt huge love. It was similar to the Divine Mother. And that experience I understood from my grandmother, you know, because I grew up and she was a teacher of satsang. So I could feel my heart, you know, open slowly. And I understood it was the divine. I understood it was grace, because the fact that a young, you know, donor had just died outside the hospital. And as a recipient, I was ushered in immediately. So that's divine timing, and that's grace. And what a gift, you know, a priceless gift. I never met this young woman, yet she and I had an exchange that is not even, I can't even express what she's done for me.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And there's such a theme of the Divine Mother in your work, isn't there? And in your life. The abandonment by your own mother, the experiences with your stepmother.
Yes.
The what you've expressed here, almost that you had to be the divine mother of that donated kidney.
Absolutely.
And that meant being your own divine mother in a sense. And then, you know, how that, as I read in your bio, that your sadhana became motherhood, that's been your primary spiritual practice. Can you say more about that? I think that's so beautiful, Hila.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that in this lifetime, I came to be a mother. It was simply mothering that was going to open me up. And through mothering, I was to explore the tragedy of not having a mother and the implications, you know, on my inner child, my body, my heart. And then to work so deeply as Jamie and Sienna came through, so that I wouldn't hand my trauma and abandonment issues over to them, but instead they forced me into spiritual practice. The Course in Miracles came through Jamie's nursery group. You know, as I was giving birth to Sienna, I was chanting and I met with Chloe Goodchild. So the children were saying, "Mom, these are the tools, start using them." And of course they were the tools. And of course Grace was ushering in, you know, this new world through them. But they, through mothering, all my trauma of not having a mother came up. So it was the perfect school. And like the Course in Miracles says, that each of our curriculums are so unique, aren't they? And the other thing I learned is that spiritual practice can take place in the home while you're cooking, cleaning, washing, driving the children to school. I've just completed 24 years of school run, or 24 years of school run. So, you know, it's all been a spiritual practice. It's all been an act of service to Jamie and Sienna, and then to the divine, actually, because what lives through Jamie and Sienna lives through me, lives through you, lives through us all.
We're only ever meeting ourselves, aren't we?
Absolutely, yes.
So you've spoken a little bit about trauma.
Yeah.
So what's your definition of trauma? What does that mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because we think that trauma has to be something big. You know, it has to be a loss, or it has to be some sort of abuse. But actually, at some level, we're all suffering from trauma, at some level, and some others than most. But it's a constriction that happens inside of us because of an event that takes place internally. And what that inner constriction does, it stops the natural flow of our life, you know, our growth, our trajectory, our destiny almost. The constriction puts a stop to a life of fulfillment, a full life. And instead of living, it's like we're surviving instead. We're just coping with life, but we're not fully embracing life. And it leaves an energetic imprint on our brain, on our mind, and on our body.
I think one of the traumas, or one of the results of trauma that most people feel, is some sense of unworthiness.
Yeah.
That even when things have been done to us, there seems to be an internalization that happened somehow because I was bad, because I wasn't worthy, because I somehow deserved this.
Yes. Yes. And through, this past year, I've processed hundreds of people through compassionate inquiry, and I've been processed myself. I've watched processes online. And what has really come up, and what's so important in trauma work, is to really understand the precise moment of disconnection that happened to us as a child. So not only did we become disconnected from our own feelings and our own true self, but there was a moment where we became disconnected from our caregivers as well. And in that moment of disconnection, we created beliefs about ourselves and coping mechanisms. And we were very young, you know, so these beliefs and coping mechanisms that got us through, you know, our younger life, a lot of the themes in the processes that I've helped people through are feelings of unworthy. I'm not loved by my mother and father. I feel alone. I feel separate. Because the other thing about trauma, when it happens, that disconnect, what compounds the trauma inside us is that usually we've gone through this traumatic experience by ourselves. There's been no one to talk to or no one to turn to. So then we've internalized it because the support system outside of ourselves just wasn't there. I mean, perhaps our parents were at work. Perhaps there were no parents around. You know, everyone's life situations are so different. And we're not blaming anyone because, you know, this is just how life goes down for a lot of us. But actually, in that aloneness, that's where our beliefs are formed. And we still carry them in adulthood unless they're explored, you know, thoroughly. They're sitting in the back of our minds. And they own us in some way. And through beliefs and coping mechanisms, we're being run automatically, you know, and our brain is hardwired too. So this one experience of disconnection has so many implications on us that it's actually quite unbelievable. And for me, I gained a real insight into why we suffer at such a deep level. And I think it was Mahatma Gandhi. He said that our beliefs become our thoughts, and our thoughts become our words. Our words become our actions. You know, our actions become our destiny. You know. So these beliefs and thoughts that we carry are so powerful, Susan. And then we take them, don't we, into each situation that we find ourselves in. So a lot of the time we're looking through the lens of trauma rather than clearly seeing what's going on or meeting people, you know, rather than through the perception of trauma. We're meeting people through the perception of trauma rather than being able to see them clearly and through the eyes of love. So it affects, you know, every part of our life.
And often we're not aware of it either. Unless we've done, you know, any kind of spiritual or psychological work or have... Mm-hmm. You know, started to investigate these things.
Yeah.
It's running our lives, and yet we don't even know.
No, that's the tragedy of it, and then that's the beauty also, isn't it, of a platform like this, where you're bringing awareness into people's lives. But at some level, also, for some people like me, you know, life just stops. It's just way too much, and then we have to always have a review and start again. So, you know, it can take you down a spiral, which, you know, for the first 21 years of my life, I had such negative thoughts and beliefs about myself that I was choosing death. I deeply believed I wasn't loved. I believed I was alone. And my life story, in my own understanding as a young child, kept representing that, you know.
And that's important to highlight.
Yes.
That our beliefs get reinforcement. And so we think, well, of course this is true. Of course it's true. But, you know, in my case, my core wound is I'm not loved. Not loved unconditionally. You know, hard work is necessary. Certain things are necessary in order to be loved. It's all around that. Mm-hmm. It contributed to my burnout and loss of my career as a school teacher. You know, all of that stuff. But I was not aware of that at all. But I could point to lots of situations where I would say to you, well, it's clear I'm not wanted. It's clear I'm not loved because look what they are doing.
Yes.
The It was only when I came onto the path and started to investigate that I was even prepared to look at, you know, that there may be some belief here that I was not aware of, and that was actually, it wasn't them. You know, I remember, you know, working with Diederik Wolzak, who I think you know his work. You know, his process is step one, I'm upset. Step two, it's all about me. You know, that coming back to what's here for me, what is this? You know, the other players in the story become irrelevant, really, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. We have to take full responsibility of our experience. You know, the buck lies with us. And if we want to change the intergenerational trauma in our family, if we want to change, you know, the atmosphere of our home, then it has to start with us.
Yeah. So how, I'm thinking, you know, there may be somebody listening, or lots of somebodies listening, who are thinking, well, I've not had any significant trauma. I'm not really relating with this. And you're saying, you know, we're saying that it's what's running your life. You know, this undigested trauma is what's running your life. What are the signs? What might be happening in someone's life that they would not have attributed to trauma? Both in their body and their mind and in their life in general, what are some of the signs that people might go, well, actually, that is happening. Could it be trauma?
Yeah. I think the first, the most significant sign is if you're facing an addiction, or you're coping with an addiction at the moment, because it's a coping mechanism and something that we picked up as a young child, that it wasn't safe to feel anymore. So then we looked in the outer world for ways that we could suppress ourselves from, so we didn't have to feel, but actually, you know, and we could be addicted to anything. It can be food or alcohol or, you know, I understood through this process that at some level, years back, I was just, you know, addicted to spiritual study. So it's it can play out in your life, you know, in any way.
I'd like to pick up on that, actually. Let's not just jump over that part, because that's important. Yeah. You know, that being addicted to spiritual study, or being addicted to pursuing spiritual states of feeling, or, you know, this idea that we get this idea in our head that, you know, once I've got it spiritually, then all I'll ever feel is love and peace and bliss, and there'll never be another problem ever. Mm-hmm. And we go to great lengths often to try to get that, and if we've had a taste of it, our whole life then becomes oriented towards, I want that back.
Yeah, we want that special state, you know. We don't want to deal with the nitty-gritty of life and the shadow of the experience. So, yes, you know, we're chasing these dreams and imagined futures. And in the long run, I mean, you know, what addiction does is it has a real knock-on effect on your life, you know. So further down the line, you know, we can begin to have health issues corresponding to our addictions, but also the trauma. Like, I'm just a living example of what trauma at the age of 5, 6, 7 did for me, because by the age of 21, I was in complete renal failure, you know, and there are so many illnesses now that people are beginning to understand you know, the effects of childhood trauma. Not all of them, but there are lots. I've processed so many people with cancer. I've processed people with migraines, headaches, irritable bowel syndrome, anxiety, stress.
What about autoimmune conditions? So that's how it manifested in me.
Yes, absolutely. Autoimmune. And what's really interesting, that I must say is that as I processed each person and I went through this year, the hardest thing for a person to do is to begin to feel, you know, really feel into our bodies, because we've cut ourselves off from our hearts. You know, we had to as a child, because that's where our safety lied, you know. And a lot of, like, I'm not judging these beliefs and I'm not judging these coping mechanisms, because we had, you know, it was a safe way to exist for us. But further down the line, 10, 20 years on, if these beliefs and coping mechanisms aren't explored, then, you know, we're facing quite severe implications. So what I have found is that feeling is actually scary, you know, for so many people, because we've shut down our hearts and we can't sense either, because the gut is always talking to us intuitively. It knows, you know, we know intuitively what's right or wrong. But again, you know, we've also shut down our ability to sense. That means that our mind and our heart and our brain is not congruent. And in that way, we're not in the present moment. And we can't meet our experience, you know. So the implications of this everyday life experience can be touched in a way where trauma is really running the show. I feel that, you know, even ADHD, PTSD, they're all coming from this place of shutdown. So if we look at even, relationships, the other thing that was really coming through is the cycles that we keep repeating, you know, with different people, but the same situation, you know. It's if we have repeating patterns in our lives, and that's definitely coming from a hard wiring in our brain that needs to be loosened, you know.
I noticed that from two marriages, two different husbands, two different faces looking at me.
Yes.
And I perceived that they were saying the same things, because that wound is being triggered again. And that was a thing that really stopped me, because I thought, this is not even the same person.
As soon as we're triggered, you know, that triggering actually is calling us to go right back into our childhood wounding, because that triggering is playing out, you know, constantly. It's a patterning that's being touched each time we're in a situation with another. So, you know, just to be really, really aware that it's running us, and anything that's running us is coming from our trauma.
So you're training with Dr. Gabor Maté in his compassionate inquiry approach, which you've mentioned already. Tell us more about that. What is compassionate inquiry?
Yeah, compassionate inquiry is a beautiful approach, and I would go as far as to say that it's a spiritual tool, although Dr. Gabor Maté, you know, he sees it as a psychotherapeutic tool. But because I've been a student of Course in Miracles, I've just found that it uncovers the inner dynamics that are underneath the identity that we present to the world. And those are the dynamics, the thoughts, the beliefs that need to be looked at with clarity and love, you know, so we're not blaming ourselves or shaming ourselves, but actually full-heartedly loving ourselves through our tragedies and traumas.
There's such a tendency, I think we've already said this, but there is such a tendency to think that I've done something wrong or...
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
The inevitability of things almost, that, you know, things could never have been different and can never be different.
Yes. Yes.
So, and can you give me a flavour of what happens? And you've said, I've picked up the phrase, I've processed people. Yes. Can you give me a flavour of what happens in a processing session?
Yeah, it's such a beautiful process. So usually somebody comes to me with a situation that they're dealing with. And, you know, there's usually quite a huge story attached to this. But my aim here is to distill that story into a sensation and feeling in the body. So once somebody has come to me and explained their situation, I want to first of all take them into their body and ask, where are you feeling this? You know, are you sensing a constriction? Are you sensing pain? So very, very slowly, I bring people into the body. Now, this is the most difficult part because they want to just keep talking. And I know that your body can do this work, not your mind, because we have to leave the mind behind, because the body is so intelligent. It has this memory, implicit memory, a body memory that can take you from a feeling right into a childhood memory. So what we're doing is, we're then opening a space up, or I'm opening up a space for someone to really begin to feel safe, you know, so that they can start feeling and sensing into what is arising. And then I could say, if that feeling or sensing could speak, if you could give it a voice or a word, what would it say? You know, and we go into that. And the mind can't answer this, but the body begins to speak. It can say, help, or get me out of here. Or, you know, I've heard a whole array of words that the body, you know, can say. And as these words start coming out, the feeling gets deeper inside them. The intensity grows. And then I can say to them, when did you first feel this feeling? Because although the story is different, the feeling that you're feeling in this story is so known to you, because it's coming from your childhood. It's come from a very, very deep place. So that feeling, once they're in touch with that, Susan, it's magic. It will take you very gently into a memory from your past. Mm-hmm. And then what we begin to uncover is what was happening at that time. Where was that feeling coming from? And they could say something like, well, you know, I've just upset my mother. She's not listening to me. She's angry. I'm feeling alone. I'm feeling unloved. I'm feeling unwanted. And then we go deeper into what's happening and trying to understand, just from a child's perspective, how they're perceiving their mother or their father or their brother or their sister or their aunt or their uncle or their teacher. Is what's happening inside the child, is they're feeling a constriction. They're beginning to feel they're unloved. They can't be seen anymore. They can't be heard anymore. So in that moment, we're beginning to really see what that child went through as they went through that experience of disconnection from mother, from father, from themselves, from their own feeling. And then we really, really talk to this child. This child absolutely has to be seen. It has to be met. It has to be really honored, you know. And we talk to the child, or we bring in a child of a similar age that the person may know. And through that child, we really begin to understand. So what are you believing about yourself in this moment? And that's when we really begin to see that this is where we created a belief system, because we believed we weren't loved. We felt disconnected. Our mums or dads or carers just weren't there for us. And then we just bring real compassion into this moment for this child, so they can really begin to feel the love of the true self and the love that I'm holding for them, and reminding them that they truly are love. And as they feel that love, they can move on and we can begin to explore. So how did you cope with this situation? You know, how did you get your needs met? Well, I stayed small. I stopped discussing things with my mom. I hid. I buried myself in study. All coping mechanisms. Or I became the joker of the family. I started to help my mother in every way possible, just to ease her pain. And then we realized at that young, tender age, we did the best we could to cope with the situation so we could stay safe. And that's such a huge understanding for someone to see, you know, as they go through this compassionate inquiry, to see how their beliefs were created, to see how their coping mechanisms were created. And we welcome all parts of this young child, you know, the part of them that got suppressed, the part of them that didn't feel loved, the part of them that hid. And offering more love. And a lot of the times at this stage, a person can go into deep, deep stillness. This isn't part of the compassionate inquiry, but because of my own investigation and my own inquiry into my own life, I understand that once we fully digest our experience, we're able to enter into that stillness that's always been there for us, that is ever present. But because of the clouds and the shadows and the darkness and the fear, we can't access these places. And we haven't been given the tools to diligently work through and meticulously go through our suffering. So the stillness arrives, the love arrives. And then there's an understanding of, gosh, now I understand myself. And now I know why I do certain things and act certain ways. And that, there's a celebration in that. And a recovery of a part of themselves that they lost way back. And over time, you know, life can become much more fulfilling. And you can really begin to live and not just survive. And through the inquiry, there's a shift in consciousness from when you start to when you end. It's like a shift from fear into love. And as we begin to bring integration to this process, people can begin to see that they don't really need to believe these beliefs anymore. They don't actually have to continue in the same way that they've lived. You know, that takes time, but they're beginning to bring awareness to why they do what they do and why they live the way they live and how they cope the way they cope. So there's huge awareness that comes through for each client. And then there's freedom. They can choose again, you know, choose a life of love. And there's a huge capacity to forgive as well, because in that moment you realize that your parents were also probably traumatized. They had so much to cope with. They had their own belief systems and their own coping mechanisms. And so many women that I've processed, actually, they've, through almost like osmosis, they've taken on their mother's traumas, you know, and they're playing out in the present day. And so many women are unaware of what they've taken on from their mothers. So that was also a really big insight for me as I processed women, how much we take on. So yeah, it's a place to slow down and unpack your life.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you were speaking, what was coming to me was, you know, as you spoke of the stillness,
yeah,
that's discovered, that is our true nature. That was always there.
Yeah.
Covered up by all of our beliefs and traumas.
Yeah. Yeah. And the stillness is so palpable. You know, if the client has any inclination towards their true self, then it's fully there for them to experience. And there's so much relief as well, Susan, because when our body holds trauma, it's in a compromised position, actually, internally. And so much of our energy is used in resisting our true nature and confining ourselves to stay constricted. So the other thing that I've really watched is how much release there is of stuck energy in the body. And in 2017, I did a beautiful pain body course with Eckhart Tolle and Kim Eng. And on that course, Eckhart Tolle spoke about how he doesn't think many people will be motivated to enter into the new state of consciousness, because there's so much energy stuck in our bodies and people aren't willing to go in and transmute it, you know, into our true nature, into our true self. So this work is absolutely paramount, you know, to really, it's like the body talks to us all the time, but we don't want to listen to it. There's an invitation there to sense and listen and feel. And I know from my own experience, and, you know, doctors are asking, how have you kept this transplant alive for 27 years? I mean, my initial native kidneys only lasted 21 years. So what have you been doing?
Lifespan of a donated kidney.
Sorry?
What's the expected viability of a donated kidney?
About 20 years, Susan. So, you know, just through sensing, feeling, listening, letting go of the trauma, like my kidney's so happy. And even the other Now, I have three kidneys in my body. So even the other two kidneys at the back that had actually shrank, you know, in size, I'm working with a homeopath. And there's chi, life force energy running through them. So not, you know, I wouldn't be able to live without this transplanted kidney. But I'm just saying that, you know, you can begin to even work in ways and areas in your body that there's no hope, and you've been told that, you know, actually you need to look at something else, or, you know, we can't heal you, or you're never going to resurrect. But actually working with the body and feeling and sensing, there's so much magic that can happen.
So you're going to be coming to the Evolve community at Center for Awakening to offer 4 weekly sessions in May.
Yeah.
I don't think we've quite landed on the title yet, but it's going to be around compassionate inquiry. And you, one of the titles that you gave me was the inner postures of peace. Which
yeah. It's because I want to bring meditation into the inquiry process, because that means we can go deeper. And I really want people to understand how to sense into their bodies. And I want to, you know, what was quite remarkable is that every thought and belief has a weight. You know, when we go into the subtle areas internally, it has a texture, a weight, and we want to get into a place where we can really, you know, begin to feel what it feels like to just be with our body, to listen to it, and to respond in a way that's healthy and that it's asking for us to respond in. So yes, I really want to bring body sensing and compassionate inquiry together, and share this beautiful, beautiful work.
And one question that I have about that is, you know, you've spoken, you know, about working with people and processing people, which I'm assuming is one-to-one work generally. How does this process work in a group setting, which is what we'll be doing together in May?
Well, what I have found is that working in a group allows so much learning, because each person will bring their own understanding and processing and experience. So as a group, which, you know, it's going to be alive, organic, you can begin to learn, you know, from each other. Now, what will come up, and what I really want to emphasize, is that I'm pointing to areas where people can walk away and say, actually, I want to explore this further. Perhaps I would need to go to a psychotherapist or see a counselor or open this up with a body worker. So I wish I could process each person one by one, because I know it would be hugely transformative. But we may be able to work with perhaps, you know, one person at a time, and then so that I can explain where we're going, and then work together as a group, so that, because otherwise if I was to sit and process each person, it would take too long. So the group energy will support each member, and I'm, you know, open to really discussion. I'm open to people wanting to explore what they've experienced, and I'm going to do this extremely gently. There's no rush here. There's no expectation. There's no trying to change or fix anything. I just want us to meet our body and our experience in a way that is true, you know, in the immediacy of the experience. And then gently, I will guide us into, yeah, I would call them like stepping stones. So each week I'll do take us deeper and deeper through stepping stones into deeper levels of ourselves.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so am I.
So it begins on, is it May the 6th? Monday, May the 6th. And yep. At 3 to 4:30 p.m. Eastern time, which is 8 to 9:30 p.m. UK time. Any final words that you'd like to say, Hina? It's been a pleasure talking to you. I'm so interested in all of this stuff. You know, you know, as we said before we started the recording, often on a spiritual path, we can take teachings such as in A Course in Miracles, you know, I'm not my body. I'm not the body. I am free. I'm still as God created me. And misinterpret that to the extent that we do not include the body in any way in our spiritual practice. So maybe you can say a word to people who perhaps, you know, have taken those lines in A Course in Miracles to mean some kind of disconnection or avoidance of the body.
Yeah, well, in this lifetime, my curriculum has not allowed me to ignore the body in any way. If anything, it's been a portal into presence. And I will say one thing, you know, this work is so crucial because for years, you know, I've chanted, I've meditated, I've forgiven. However, no matter how much I involved myself in these spiritual practices and, you know, more and more sorrow was lifted and more anxiety came away and more trauma became unblocked, it wasn't until I really met with my inner child self and really, really got to unpack her conditioning, her story, her beliefs, did I begin to really make headway in my journey to really understanding that my ground of being was not my isolated, separated self, but is actually the stillness. It is the all-encompassing presence that dances us and lives through us and works through us. And so meeting the wounding or the trauma, and we will only meet what the body's ready to release. You see, the body's really clever. It's not going to force you into any position you don't want to be in. And I certainly work very gently, you know, so I'm not forcing here either. But what I'm doing is I'm pointing to perhaps areas where people can slowly begin to open up and begin to have more autonomy in their lives. And that's all we want for each other, you know. We everyone on this journey has a heart filled with love and we want to share. And so for me, this has been a life-transforming tool. And I've watched process after process. So if I can share something like this, then I know that, you know, this is a calling that I'm fulfilling.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I'm so happy that we're going to be able to experience that.
Yeah.
So as I said, I will leave details in the show notes of how to join us in the Evolve community on May the 6th and the four Mondays thereafter. Thank you so much, Hina. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you so much. It's been such a beautiful experience to share.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye-bye.